Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Audio Signals Podcast, hosted by Marco Ciappelli. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then take a moment to rate this show and add it to your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. We invite you to come back for more stories and follow Marco Ciappelli on his social media as he continues musing on stories, storytelling, and storytellers.
Alejandro Juarez Crawford, and I'm the co-founder of Rebelbase, which is a SaaS platform that enables people around the world, when confronting tough problems and broken systems, to create their own experiments to solve them. I'm also chair of the Global Certificate in Sustainability and Social Enterprise and professor of entrepreneurship at Bard's MBA in Sustainability. And I'm very happy to be here on Audio Signals. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Mim Plavin Masterman. I'm an associate professor of business administration at Worcester State, and I teach classes in management, organizational culture, and innovation. I'm also excited to be here because Alejandro and I have lots of fun things to talk about in the podcast we're working on.
Perfect.
We're here for fun, Marco, just to be clear.
And you know what? To make it fun, you just gave a huge gift to my audience because they usually listen to me blobbing for about a couple of minutes before I introduce the guest. And you guys just jumped on it. So everybody's happy. Everybody knows who you are. And now I'm going to say what we talk about here, because on Audio Signals, as I lately say, I've repositioned the antenna to capture stories about storytellers that are behind the stories. And stories is everything. As I like to say, we are all made of stories. And that can be a podcast. It can be a book. It can be music. It can be painting, photographer. We all have stories to tell. And here I'm happy because I'm actually giving you the welcome for the new show on ITSP Magazine, which is called What If Instead? With a big question mark. And it's honestly one of my favorite questions. Either we're talking about hacking and changing things the way they are and questioning what if the moon wasn't there, what happened to the planet, and so on. I am so excited to have you on. Alejandro, you've been here on my show before, and we talk about crazy stuff like Renaissance and so on. Mim, welcome for the first time. I'm sure it's not the last. So thank you for the introduction. And let's dive into that. Alejandro, I know after our conversation, I said, I really love that you should have a podcast. That was a while back. What happened since? And why now you have a podcast?
Well, you cursed me, Marco. You know, those famous words, you should have a podcast. They can really derail a life, which is what's happened to me. But seriously, you mentioned talking about crazy stuff. And I love that because two of the things you said in your introduction are actually perfect segues into what we're working on. One is this wonderful image of repositioning the antenna. And of course, I congenitally watch metaphors like cartoons. So when you say repositioning the antenna, I'm seeing, hearing the sound effects, a whole antenna repositioning itself. And that's so in my mind already are, where was the antenna focused? Who is it now focused on? And then you use the second phrase that we are all made of stories, which I really love because one of the discoveries Mim and I just made in recording the first few episodes with guests from around the world, episodes of What If Instead, was that guests were commenting, you know, the stories I most want to tell are ones that I'm going to think of right after this podcast. So we have started actually to prompt them, one of the things that we are really trying to do that connects these two ideas of repositioning the antenna and being made of stories is to interview our guests less about the story that they're the hero of and more about their efforts to enable other people to become heroes of stories yet to be told. And so our way of repositioning that antenna is to talk to the guest about how they do that. So we've started to actually ask them before each interview to think through the hero's journey. What got you out of your life in the Shire, if you're Bilbo Baggins? What monsters did you face? What magic objects did you use? Who helped you along the way? What strange creatures helped you? We've started to ask them to think of those things less for themselves and more for the people that they're enabling to ask, what if instead?
Anything to add, ma'am?
I guess I would say one of the things that I think my training and my background as a sociologist helps me ask is, what are we doing and why are we doing it this way? And so now what if instead is really picking up on that question and saying, well, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to stay this way. We can make it better. What if instead we try something else? And so I just feel like our backgrounds kind of intersect in a nice way to set up all these questions for people.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's why Alejandro and I are back together on a show, because, you know, Campbell, the journey, the hero journey, Bilbo Baggins. I mean, you couldn't take the, you know, more pleasant story that I really love, like the Shire and everything that happened there. But also this idea of questioning things, right? If there is one question that I like, it is, like I said at the beginning, is what if instead? Or why is like this? Like a kid, like why? Why the sky is blue? Why? Why this and that? And the thing that I like the less is when people answer, we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a reason not to change. So let's talk about that.
Well, one of the interesting things about that tension, we've always done it this way versus what if instead it worked this way, is that if you just ask people, do you think of yourself as an entrepreneur or as someone making change? Not everybody thinks of themselves that way. But if instead you ask folks, what should just work differently? What's backwards the way it works? No matter your age, your part of the world, we've now asked these questions to people in 20 countries, 5 continents, your background, I have yet to meet a person who doesn't just rise to that question and come alive to that question, but doesn't really become fired up by the process, the difficult process of attempting to develop an answer in practice. And that's been a revelation to me. So when you talk about folks who, well, it's always worked that way, it's worth asking, well, who's saying that, right? Who are the, are we, so we had a conversation recently. I was interviewed by a journalist at Wired Magazine with my colleague, Sebastian Crowe, last weekend. And he said, well, yeah, this is true, everyone, but our VCs, I had given a TEDx in the fall about ways in which we need to change venture capital. And the journalist asked us and said, well, but are VCs really going to listen to this? It's worked this way for a long time. They expect their hockey stick. They expect everything to be, you know, typical, I don't know, the next Bitcoin type model, right? That becomes a trend. But what I tried to respond with was, hold on. Aren't those the incumbents? Aren't those the same old folks who are plugged into a certain way of doing things? And what if instead we ask people who have answers and also have resources? I think the biggest mistake we make is to assume that the existing resources and those determining how they get used and which experiments they get invested in have to stay the same. If instead we say, wait a minute, most of the value, most of the resources, most of the ideas are not even being tried or not even being applied, then we can connect those things and enable folks who aren't incumbent, because it is an incumbency dynamic when someone says, because it's always worked that way. That's because I'm in a role, in a sinecure, in a role where I've just kind of settled into it. But if instead we turn our lens toward people who aren't, something radically different can happen.
Right. And Mima, to go a little deeper into this, I was reading on your bio that you focus on organizational culture and innovation.
That's right.
And it was kind of funny for me, not really funny, but culture and innovation, sometimes people perceive it as opposite, because culture is what is being, always being the culture of, you know, a tribe, of a population, of a country, whatever it is. And it's almost like the tradition. A lot of people interpret culture with tradition. But then you put innovation right next to it, and how cultures sometimes take time to adapt to innovation. So I would love for you to explain me how you put these two together.
Sure. So it's not my framework, but it's one that I use regularly. It's a framework by Cameron and O'Quinn that talks about cultural values. And organizations are always trying to balance competing cultural values. Do you make your employees happy? Do you make your customers happy? Do you plan for the long term? Do you plan for the short term? Do you care about the process? Do you care about the outcome? Do you care about the people? And they're always trading off these questions. And so ideally, there's an intersection where you care more about, let's say, people and long term and process. And so you land in the particular cultural values quadrant. And for that quadrant, how you do innovation will look very different than if you're a quadrant that cares about the outcome and the short term and making customers happy. You'll still do innovation, but your focus will be different. Internally, if you're a internally focused company, it's how do we innovate the process to make our employees happier so they in turn make the customers happier, right? If you're an outcome-faced company, you're like, well, let's just make the outcome work better because then the customers are telling us they want something different. So like what's driving the innovation is coming from a different source, but it's still around doing something better. And I guess I would say it just sort of reorders or variably weights who gets first priority for whose needs get met first, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like you change, you keep it balanced, but you change the position of the value.
That's right. Because you can't make everybody happy all the time. You can't, right? You can't, right. And so somebody has to come first. And so, and this isn't saying that one set of values is better. It's just saying that they're different. And yeah. So, yeah.
But maybe what is better is to be shifting who comes first. Because if it's always the same folks who come first,
that's right.
What I meant by incumbency earlier, then unfortunately we get this lack of mobility, right? Self-confirming phenomena. There's a quotation by James G. Hirsch, an organizational theorist that I often think of, and he says, homogeneous groups are very good at doing what they already know how to do well, but become progressively worse at investigating alternatives. And that is so different from the way we usually think about when you hear people talk about diversity, right? It's almost like, oh, we need to help you poor people who are underrepresented to be part of things. I think of it from the opposite point of view. I think if it's no new blood, if it's the same folks with the same biases and the same assumptions who are always doing things, and you don't change who's first in the way, Mim, you've described, then we end up with the kind of decrepit ideas, the kind of ideas that are increasingly unresponsive, which is what MIMS in my book is about, that we're dealing with today.
And that makes me think about generative AI, which is feeding on the same. But let's not go there. I have to say AI because, you know, it's a drinking game. You say AI, you have a shot, I guess. But we're not going to go there.
I'm a cyborg, so I can't really do shots, but I have a pretty good, it looks like I'm getting drunk. It's not bad, actually. We're tweaking it a little.
You're saving money, too. That's good. Let's talk about the podcast. So at this point, people are listening to this. There's already the first episode out. And you mentioned you already have a few already recorded as well. So what do you focus on And how do you apply the things that we already talk about, right? Storytelling, democratizing innovation, giving chances maybe to the one that don't have a chance. And who are the people that you're bringing on to tell these stories? And Mim, you want to start?
Sure. So one, our first several episodes involve people from across the world, people from Ghana, from South Africa, from Kyrgyzstan, and actually somebody from the US. I'm not sure in which order they're going to air right now as we're saying this. But when we talk to these people, we're looking for people who are problem solvers. So even if people don't think of themselves as entrepreneurs, they think of themselves as helping people solve problems. And so we're looking at multiple levels of society, people who are working across large groups of people, helping them solve problems, people who are working in small communities, helping them solve problems and hoping that that cascades out. And so we're always looking for people who are finding new ways to connect to people who have been left out, and with the goal of amplifying their voices to help them solve their own problems. And this is another piece of it too, of getting people in the mindset of helping them solve their own problems versus we'll come in with a great solution and solve your problem for you. And then we're all done and we pack up and we leave. Go ahead.
That point, excuse me, Mim, is essential where you talk about cascading effects, right? If we parachute in, show you the way we figured out the best way to do things, right? Whether we're a management consultancy or a global NGO, then you haven't built, it's not just capacity, right? That's just part of it. You haven't solved problems in a way that's organic to you. In Cities in the Wealth of Nations, Jane Jacobs does this incredible description of how economies get built. And I like to think she cracked the code in ways that macroeconomics would be too threatened by if it tried to assimilate it, because she said, look, it's always starts with either innovating something new as a way of meeting needs and solving problems, or finding your local way of meeting a need or solving a problem that you used to have to bring the solution in. And that's the opposite of this parachute in, solve the problem. When we do that, and it's no different from, you know, helping a bird out of its shell, right? Or maybe that's too much of a sort of a parental metaphor. It's no different from anyone who is doing something, often something better than I would have thought of. And if I go in and start telling them with my confidence and my credentials how they should do it, then it's not just the capacity that's lost, it's the solutions that they understand that I don't, and that people in the institutions that I have access to don't. And that's where we get this narrowing of thinking and this sort of eviscerating of the kinds of models we're bringing to human needs and civilizations. So Mim, when you talk about enabling the problem solvers, it's important that the emphasis is on that cascading effect, where we're looking much more interested in how any of our guests enable other people to develop solutions, even when their solution doesn't get used, to be in a process of experimentation and iteration. Marco, as we've been talking about since we met, that's far more important than some solution that is, you know, the flavor of the month internationally.
And what about the fact that the people that are really living a certain problem, a certain situation, are the one that can see it and really understand it, instead of, again, parachuting from the outside and say, yep, we got you. No, you don't got me anything. You don't really understand what we're dealing with. Maybe we're missing some technology, maybe some instrument, some financial problem that we can address if we have those, right?
That's just it. Andy Ayiku, one of our guests who will be the interviewee in our first episode, does this wonderful thing where he says, even when it's a technology-based solution, the bulk of the solution is what works with local dynamics.
Right.
Just a part of it is the stuff that may be borrowed from elsewhere. And that's a reverse of the 10-90 or the 80-20 we think about, right? Even, not that we need to reinvent every wheel. Sebastian Gros, who's a guest we're going to have on in a few weeks, he talks about, he gave an incredible speech at the pre-COP conference where he said, we need to build an army of climate entrepreneurs in the global South. Now, full disclosure, I co-wrote the speech with him, so I'm not a neutral party here. But the idea that he has been so successful in getting out there since is that, Marco, just as you said, if we don't go to the folks that know the lay of the land, right, the resources, the practices, the culture, the technical constraints, then we will fail to generate the solutions that we need. And it goes beyond the wonderful work that Vijay Govindarajan and Chris Trimble did on reverse innovation, which is important work, to say this isn't the reverse at all. This is actually where it starts. And it's not just about the multinationals.
I was noting that the wonderful work on reverse innovation that Vijay Govindarajan and Chris Trimble has done has already established well the constraint-driven innovation that can happen in low-resource situations, contexts. But it goes even beyond that, we argue, to the fact that innovation needs to start to go forward from not just the large organization finding the small innovation, but actually we need to flip it on its head and have millions of experiments. We need to enter an era where it's kind of like the old long tail idea from broadcasting, right? Chris Anderson's idea. But this has to apply to a process of mutation and natural selection where millions of things get tried. And we need to do that in this decade if we're going to address the need to change our industries and our civilization for the human future in the era of climate change and beyond.
So I would say I agree with all of what Alejandro said. But to bring it back to initially what we talked about with stories, and we're all made of stories in the hero's journey, I think there's a couple things. One is we are looking for people who are trying to get local community members, problem solvers, to think of themselves as the hero. That's the first thing. Versus you're a reader in a story about somebody else's heroic journey. No, you're the hero. You're making the journey. Right. So that's the first thing. Even if your journey is not that far, you're making the journey. And then the second piece is really this important cultural values piece of the person who's telling the story from a particular time and place. They kind of know the beats the story has to hit in ways that somebody coming from outside does not. And so there's a local flavor that has to be, you know, the story has to go this way. The story has to proceed in this way. Whatever that structure is that makes sense for the culture, that's how they have to tell the story. And so I think that thinking about those are the kinds of people whose stories we elevate here.
I think you mentioned in the description of the podcast this powers discovery, right? So can you go a little bit deeper into that? Like what is this kind of power that people can discover throughout the journey?
Well, sure. So some of the examples that we've learned, and actually all of the people that we've interviewed have this through line of empathy for the people that they're trying to help, even though they're putting these people in what to us would seem like very challenging situations. That process, the process of presenting your idea, refining it, being challenged, that's a process of discovery that all of the people that we've been interviewing are doing for others. And they're combining this challenge, but with this empathy. The goal is to help people sort of transform themselves.
And it goes back also to, we were joking about Bilbo Baggins and the Shire at the beginning of this with that hero's journey. The reason those books, I think along with the Harry Potter books, are the books that human beings have chosen to read most in all of history, right? So the exceptions would be like books that are religious books or books by Mao, right? But the books that people have read on purpose and for fun are books that are about unassuming people. They're not about the powerful wizard, really. They're not about the great fighter, really. They're about the little hobbit. The reason we love those stories, I would argue, goes way back into how value has always been created by human beings. And I think there's a risk that we forget and we say, oh, we're going to try something totally different. And we're going to see what happens if it's not the usual suspects who are creating the future. No, wait a minute. The good stuff has has always been created when we went beyond the usual suspects. And if you think about the work that Acemoglu and Robinson did in Why Nations Fail, the greatest risk now is that we start to narrow that because we forget where it came from in the first place.
Yeah, it's definitely the origin story that changed when he's the underdog, the one that you don't expect to get there, because I feel like everybody feels like that, you know, like everybody may feel like the opportunity hasn't been given to them. So are you focusing on specific topics, specific industries, or when you have this conversation, or are you going to touch many, many different aspects? I'm talking about environment, I'm talking about education, I'm talking about, I don't know, what are the topic that you're going to touch throughout the podcast?
So we have clusters of different topics. The first set of topics is called For Us, By Us. So it's really these people enabling the local problem solving to seed and take root. But we also have topics on climate and remaking the future. We have topics like climate and the public health crisis. So we're really getting into things about the environment and the impacts on people. We're talking about leaders beyond the usual suspects. So really diving deep into these different pieces of the puzzle, with the goal being you don't have to listen to kind of each set to get an overall sense, but you could pick up sort of a set of leaders beyond the usual suspects and get a flavor of the kinds of change that we'd like to make, for example. But or you could pick up climate and public health crisis and be like, what do I do now? And then hopefully listen to leaders beyond the usual suspects and be like, see, there's an answer. Like, we're not just going to scare people. I think the podcast is actually quite optimistic, even though we deal with some weighty topics and some relatively like frustrating or difficult topics.
Agreed.
Good. And how about the audience? Because I always think, like, when you're writing a book, even if you're writing it, the story for yourself, or you're painting something for yourself as a true artist, right? Like, you don't worry about, is it going to sell? But nowadays, you know, even if it's not something you sell, like, there is social media, there is, you know, you want to please someone, but hopefully you stay honest to what your art is. So turn that into a podcasters or storytellers like you guys. Who are you thinking your ideal audience is going to be? And I know everybody wants everybody. I want my audience to be everybody. But starting with what you have in your mind, who are you doing this for mainly?
We've actually put a good bit of thought into this. And the first thing I would mention is that there is a ton of data about the growing interest in everything from social innovation all the way through to changing the way things work to avert the climate disaster. And we are addressing not a made-up hybrid audience, but a burgeoning convergence. There's a mouthful. The burgeoning convergence. We are addressing several things that are coming together very rapidly, where, for example, you have majorities of young people around the world who are now saying that their greatest concerns are climate. You have rising generations that are saying, wait a minute, we don't want the old career ladder. The way I interpret it is, you handed us broken systems here. We have in every industry and in communities, companies, schools, you have this burgeoning interest in social innovation and entrepreneurship, this awareness, even in education, as hidebound as it can be, that we need to start looking at not just rehearsing the way things were done yesterday because they're not working, but trying our hands together on the way things could be done. So that audience it doesn't fit a classic, here are a bunch of, you know, people between the ages of 33 and 45 who make $120,000 a year and really want a Rolex, right? Forget that. This is about a
a number of converging factors around the world that folks are super hungry for ideas on. And that's not something we made up. The cool thing, and we've had the privilege of being funded to do research around people around the world, is that when folks are exposed to what we're talking about, whether they're one of the Nelsons, the people that work in the Bia Nelson Foundation in one of our, the Bia Nelson movement, one of our recent interviews in South Africa, or they're someone studying at a at American University of Central Asia, another one of our recent interviews in their social innovation lab of Kyrgyzstan. In either case, you have people who are, when given the experience of saying, wait a minute, let's make something new, they don't just rise to the occasion. It's like splitting the atom. All this power is released. Just one other note to give this flesh, as it were, and you'll see that that's almost an unconscious pun. Today, I got a WhatsApp message. There's a group in Dhaka, Bangladesh, that took part in some of this work. They worked with Sebastian Groh, whom I mentioned. They used the Rebel-based platform, which is the software that we've all developed to enable people to do this stuff. And they created an innovation called Rindco Leathers, right? And this is leather alternatives developed using local abundant plant sources and materials. And this is not folks that just said, hey, wouldn't it be great if we had plant-based leather, right? This is folks who are busy figuring it out, and they just got more funding. They won a competition in the fall. They just got money from H&M and others. And we can have a separate argument about how prepared a funder like H&M is to be part of the solution. But that is folks who, through this process, are finding their power, and I would argue can lead the way for the incumbents and help them change too.
Mim, do you have the same audience in mind?
I think mostly yes. I think the other thing that we're hoping is just the stories that our interviewees are telling people are just interesting enough for people to want to learn more about them. So, and to say, oh, maybe I could do that in my neighborhood, or I could make my version of that work for me. So that's the second piece of someone who's like, I kind of think I want to fix something, but I don't really know where to start. And I don't even really know what I want to fix. But maybe hearing one of these people talk about a similar problem that they've solved sparks something in someone else who didn't even know that they were a problem solver until they heard it. So that's my hope too, is that it's not just people like Alejandro's talking about, people who don't even think of themselves as entrepreneurs until maybe they hear something that sparks.
Right, right. So let's take the last 5 minutes or so to talk about the importance of storytelling, right? Because that's what I love. I mean, I come from advertising, so even a story that you can tell in a headline and a sub-headline as a copywriter, or you know, like in a short 30 seconds ads. I mean, you kind of want to tell the full story, because it's the difference between capturing the audience, portraying your brand, or making the sale ultimately. Mm-hmm. And again, either you're selling to change the world or you're selling a product, right? A consumer product. Your goal is still to convince. Now, one may be a better, more, you know, honorable things to sell than the other, but still you need to kind of lever that emotional aspect, that, you know, why the hobbit goes on this journey, right? What moved them, and what you're moved by that. Now, it doesn't need to be a trilogy or it's a sixlogy or whatever you call it. But so storytelling, you have a great idea. You need to find funding, you need to convince government, whatever. Like, tell me, what's a good story to move? And that's a question for both of you.
Let me make a segue first with Rindco Leathers, right? And I'm gonna correct that the funder that just funded their pre-seed research is H&M Foundation and Build Bangladesh. Those people, first of all, became the stars of the story, right? By creating another vision. But they weren't able to, we talk a lot about doing it, right? They had to do it, and then they need to find compelling ways to talk about what they're doing to people can who can help them succeed in doing it, right? The legendary definition of entrepreneurship that I often cite is Howard Stevenson's. It's the pursuit of opportunity using resources beyond your control, right? And part of that is being able to tell a story about why what you're, this experiment you're doing can have an impact and can matter. But there's another side of this that I just want to highlight. There's a wonderful social entrepreneur called Sakhi Ataye, who created Kaj, which is a nonprofit that has been successfully enabling Afghan women who are currently prohibited from pursuing education in country to gain that education. And one of the elements of Sakhi's vision that is most powerful for me is that the whole point of this is, yes, to be able to pursue your education, but it's also about the voices of the people that Kaj is serving and enabling. Because without their voices and their stories, we hear this narrative. How many times have you thought about the news in Afghanistan recently? Right? It was a news story. Now, you're not going to see much about it in the front pages. But the story didn't stop. It didn't stop with Taliban retaking Kabul. For each of those girls who needs to fulfill her potential, there are people like Sakhi who are both building and telling. If I could say it in a nutshell, it's that we've got to cultivate those two things together.
I guess all that I would add to it is any pitch that we would make, any story that we would tell to government, is the story of innovation is what drives countries forward. It just is. And the more we can get people to think about innovating, even in ways that are quite small, the more we build a culture of experimentation and trying, the more we continue to kind of fulfill the promise that our country made to ourselves when we tried to found as a separate country, right? We continue to move forward. We continue to try to improve, to be more perfect, not perfect, but more perfect. You know, we can do better.
Yeah, and let's not forget that philosophically speaking, an ideal is never meant to be rich, right? Because things change. So we're always on a constant change. And I think that what drive that is that, what if instead, what if I could do it better? Maybe not for me, better for me, but also maybe next time it should be better for someone else, better for everybody. So I think with this, I'm going to just invite people to listen to the first episode or the second or the third, wherever you're listening to this. I don't know, you may be listening 3 months after that we've recorded, and there is a ton of What If Instead episodes on the podcast. And there will be links underneath here to learn more about Alejandro and Mim. And I just want to thank you both to find the time to spend it with me, and I hope we can have more conversation. Maybe the next one is about your book coming up. You wanna throw a tease on that one, Alejandro?
Let's do it this way. So
what
if we've mentioned problem solvers on this call. First of all, we place the focus on them. So if you're interested in what Sakhi is doing with Kaj, look it up. Kajeducation.org. It's K-A-A-J education.org. I have no stake in this, right? If you're interested in what Rindco Leathers is doing, go on Instagram. They have an Instagram, and it's R-I-N-D-C-O Leathers out of Dhaka, Bangladesh. So first of all, we place the focus on them, and that is the segue into the book that the great Mim Plavin Masterman and I are developing, and it's called One Size Fits None. And it looks at the models that lead us to create unresponsive systems. And that includes frustrating systems. I'm lost in my hospital. I can't figure out how to get somebody to deal with my device. These are just throughout technology. And I would argue that we're going further and further into funding systems that treat you as an edge case, meaning an afterthought. Okay. And we're making a connection between the increasing effort to fund those models, which make nice flywheels and hockey sticks in one sense, and our failure to create responsiveness in what we build, which we think is exacerbating our inability to address climate change, so that we as human beings are, in Hunter Lovin's formulation, like folks with a bomb about to go off in our building who are standing around talking about whether we can, I don't know, have better tea or something like that. The tea part wasn't Hunter.
Well, that sounds like a good conversation for my other show, Redefining Society, because it fits technology, it fits into the societal vision. And of course, with your background, there is no question there's going to be a great conversation. So I want to say goodbye, everybody, to stay tuned with Audio Signal Podcast, but also to check the Redefining Society one, and of course the What If Instead podcast. So stay tuned, there'll be much more, many more stories coming up to you. And Mim and Alejandro, thank you so much. Bye bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marco. What a pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Audio Signals Podcast, hosted by Marco Ciappelli. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then take a moment to rate this show and add it to your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. We invite you to come back for more stories and follow Marco Ciappelli on his social media as he continues musing on stories, storytelling, and storytellers. Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSP Mag 24.